Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Discussions with Delia Farquharson. Delia is a licensed social worker and experienced life coach, dedicated to helping you achieve your goals and become your better self. She specializes in helping others identify the connections between your thoughts, feelings, and actions. Welcome, Delia.
Hello and good evening, radio listeners, and welcome to another episode of Discussion with Delia. Thank you for joining us. Remember, you can call in live on 619-639-4621. Our topic this evening is a really interesting and fascinating one in many ways, and it's about mental illness. But before we get into our topic, let me welcome my fabulous guest co-host, my awesome husband, Raymond.
Hello.
So, Raymond.
Yes, ma'am.
Mental illness. Mm-hmm. And I think that every one of us knows someone who knows someone who's either mentally ill or related to someone who's mentally ill. Is that correct, would you say?
Speaking for myself, yes, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
As if it's been true ever since I was a child.
Right. So we all know someone or are related to someone who is impacted or has a mental illness. And yet there's such a stigma and such a shame related to being mentally ill or even being related to someone who's mentally ill.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder what that's about, where that came from. And the statistics bear it out, because according to the National Alliance on Mental Health, or NAMI, which is like, you know, the authority in the United States on mental health,
mm-hmm.
1 in 4 adults, or approximately 61.5 million Americans, experience mental illness in any given year.
Hmm.
So
you think that's, I mean, educated guess, that's being underreported. You think probably it's more?
Well, they're probably using that statistics for those people who were diagnosed or treated.
Right.
And I believe that there are so many more people who are impacted by mental illness who are not diagnosed or not receiving treatment.
All right. I'll ask your opinion then on this. Do you think that the spectrum, if there's such a phrase to be used in this context, of what falls in the bucket, so to speak, of mental illness, do you think that that has widened in terms of the number of things that are now counting as a positive or being diagnosed with mental illness? Has it been broadened, therefore more people are falling into this category? Is that one of the reasons potentially why, or you don't think so?
I don't think so. I don't believe so. I don't, because I think that, for example, serious mental illness,
right,
the psychotic disorders, the schizophrenia, the major
right.
depression, people who with bipolar disorder, serious mental illness, that number is reported by NAMI to be about just under 14 million people in any given year. So I think that when you think about mental illness, we're thinking about, yeah, the word spectrum, I guess, is appropriate, but we're thinking about people with a certain kind of disorder of the brain,
mm-hmm.
because that's what mental illness is. It's a disorder of the brain. And yet it stirs up the kind of stigma and the kind of shame that's not associated with the disorder of any other organ in the body.
Hmm. So you mean like people who smoke and get emphysema and chronic bronchitis and so on are not put in the same category?
Or people who develop cancer.
Right. No, I'm just saying, because the reason why I chose that, because that's an elective. You choose to smoke and become ill in that context. You don't choose to have mental illness. But in terms of us as a people, and it probably vary from country to country and within any country from region to region to, you know, educational hierarchy in terms of level of education, you know, where it vary. But, you know, are we, the stigma, is the stigma more so, is it education, is it lack of education, or is it just not taking the time to fully understand unless it really truly happens to you? And when it does, you run and hide as if you're saying it happens to others, not me. Is it education? Is it?
It is, I think, partly education. Because I remember when I was growing up,
right,
and I saw people in my community who were mentally ill.
Mm-hmm.
And the only emotion that I was conditioned or that I learned to have towards those people was not compassion, was fear.
Yeah, me too. I was saying the same thing.
Was fear.
Yeah.
I remember there was one man in my community, and if I saw him walking home from school, my heart would literally jump out of my chest.
Right.
And I would take off running like my life depended on it.
Right.
Because I was terrified of this man. And he was probably more terrified of me, because I think now when I look back,
right,
with the experience that I have, I think he was schizophrenic.
Right. So, and I guess it would make such a difference then if the number of people who are have illness or illnesses of the brain in varying degrees, if one of the things that needs to happen is, you know, is education. Because how often are we hearing now about mental illness each time there's a shooting?
And the emotion that's attached to it is
fear.
Fear,
yes, agreed. Because everyone who is mentally ill is violent.
Right.
Is portrayed as such.
Right. And so because of that, now, you know, everybody, we are being conditioned to think that when someone has a mental illness or
mm-hmm.
mental disorder,
mm-hmm.
that the likelihood of them becoming violent
mm-hmm.
or causing havoc on our society is great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we see, and it's so unfortunate that those incidents that have happened,
mm-hmm.
you know, occurred.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly it was people who were not being treated.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another part of the conversation where loved ones,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's an education not just for individuals who may have a mental illness, but for loved ones as well, to recognize how really critical it is to get to seek and get medical mental health treatment.
Right. And I guess if folks have family members who are mentally ill, they themselves, again, I guess these are onset at different times in life, depending on what's wrong,
mm-hmm.
you know, to wrap their brains around it and think, oh my gosh, it is actually here. It is actually happening to my mother, to my father, to my husband, to my wife, to my child, and having to deal with that, having, you know, not being prepared or maybe even not even thinking it's happening for real, maybe being in denial. And then having to deal with that person as a family member and dealing not only with them but dealing with their illnesses and the consequences of that, them running away from home, you know, them behaving inappropriately in public, you know, being ashamed of them, being ashamed of what you perceive them to have and not being able to relate properly with them. In terms of, like, not going out in public, they're locked up in rooms, they're no longer allowed outside, no longer allowed to visit so-and-so, and therefore their whole lives are changed, and for the worse, because you, as a person, cannot bear to for someone else to know.
Right, and that's why
yeah.
that's why professional help is so needed, you know,
mm-hmm.
because no matter what the condition is,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I think pharmacology and certainly psychotherapy
mm-hmm.
has been really successful in treating people with serious mental illness. So there are people who are, you know, schizophrenic or bipolar or, you know,
mm-hmm.
who are being successfully managed with a combination of psychotherapy and pharmacology and they lead productive lives. But, you know, understanding what it is when you see it happening and seeking help rather than
right.
you know, shrinking into the corner or trying to hide it or cover it up or shrink back in shame,
right.
you know, is not the appropriate response.
Right. But let me ask you something. For those who are mentally ill and therefore at some time, probably to the degree where they're not functioning to a level where they can either get a job, keep a job, a lot of times becoming unemployed,
mm-hmm.
right? So here you are now having someone who is unemployed because of the illness that they have, much the same way if they had any other cardiac disease
mm-hmm.
or pulmonary disease or so on, and they are not able to function. Now, there is an issue of medical coverage in terms of how much medical care and where can they go for this. Is that an issue in terms of how folks are medically covered, you know, if they're not able to work? Now, granted, if you have a job and you have medical coverage, I hope.
Well, but this is where, this is why
the
Affordable Care Act is such an awesome thing.
Right.
Because now the same level of attention that's being given to individuals with medical problems
right.
will be afforded to people with mental health problems. And that's one of the things that's really so awesome about this bill.
Right.
Or this law.
Right. But I get the sense, though, you know, that there is the level of coverage, the level of attention, the level of professional personnel available for anyone who has a mental illness is not as forthcoming as it should be.
Right.
Is that true?
Yes.
I mean, is that
yes.
your sense?
Right.
And is that an issue?
Right. I think that if the question that you're asking is, can there be additional, more resources put into serving people who are
right.
diagnosed with mental illness,
yes.
I would say absolutely yes.
So
but even so, and I'll just say this, because, you know, this is the field that I work in, and one of the things that you see happening is that even though people have increased access to mental health services,
mm-hmm.
there's still such a restriction on the dollar and how that dollar is being allocated to
right.
the agencies
right.
that it still provides, you know, a lot of it still restricts in some ways access or the kind of care that people are getting.
Right.
So I think it's a good thing that more people have the ability to access mental health services.
Right.
But I think more can be done in ensuring that the adequate mental health services are provided. And I'll just say this before, that you find that people access mental health services in mainly, you know, one of two ways. Something catastrophic happens,
mm-hmm.
Or that they do it in order to access benefits, so social service benefits, whether it's social security insurance or DSS benefits.
What's DSS?
You know, Department of Social Services.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, just so getting access to benefits and having a diagnosis that says, all right, I have this, you know, this diagnosis, this Access One diagnosis, and because of this, I am eligible for these services, but in order to maintain my eligibility for these services, I must maintain my diagnosis. And so it puts the provision of mental health services on this wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
So is that part of the problem, where those who the percentage of people who absolutely truly need this is getting diluted by those who are staying on a wheel for an ulterior motive, therefore watering down the amount of resources that are truly and absolutely available to those who really and absolutely should be getting the care?
I don't know if you'd say that they're diluting it, the services, but what's happening is that poverty is real. So for people who, for whatever reason, are unable to work, recovering from substance use after 25 years, or just been so depressed, dropped out of school, has several children, doesn't, you know, you don't have any viable way of supporting yourself,
mm-hmm.
and so social security insurance
mm-hmm.
is the way to go. And to do that, you've got to maintain your diagnosis.
Right.
You know, that's
right.
the motivation
but, yeah,
because
right.
I got to keep my benefits.
Right. You said something interesting, and I guess I will raise my hand and say I'm guilty of this, in terms of, you know, when you think of mental illness and what got you here and how you got here, and I would not profess to have any great knowledge in terms of mental illness more than what I've seen or read in my limited capacity in that sense. But when you just made examples of people who are recovering from substance abuse and people who have lost their jobs and, you know, their spouses have gone off or died and so on, and their lives, a catastrophic event, a mother, a father, a child has died, you know, that got you here. And here you are, you have more children than you can take care of, your housing is being taken away. You know, prior to all of that, you were fine. But something happened, and now your life is absolutely and totally upside down, and you are having a mental breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
And that is so real today, with jobs not being a sure thing for tomorrow, and your life is what it is, and as things happen and change in your life, you probably might lose the will to cope. In theory, it sounds easy, you know, it's like, yeah. But it happens. But in reality, it really, truly happens.
It does. It happens every day. And, you know, talk about what brought people there. So there's so many people. Because when we look at, for example, the global statistics on mental illness, and according to TED Global, it says that there are approximately 450 million people worldwide
mm-hmm.
who are diagnosed with, across the globe, suffering from mental illness. So 450 million people across the globe that are diagnosed with a mental illness.
Wow.
But what the treatment statistics, you know, the access to treatment in a developed country, such as the United States,
mm-hmm.
is about 50% of people access treatment. In the rest of the world, the developing world, only about 10% of people access treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think about that, and I think, you know, poverty in itself
mm-hmm.
Can be a precipitating factor
mm-hmm.
for somebody just kind of losing it, you know, not being able to feed yourself
mm-hmm.
properly or feed your children
mm-hmm.
or having a, you know, adequate housing, as you said before. All these things can cause people to just break.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
in that context, though, for those who are able to access treatment, and I'm sure, I mean, being in healthcare myself, I know not all level of treatment are created equal. But for those who are able to access some level of healthcare, let's say in the United States, you know, to ask these people to be compliant and to be good patients, so to speak. Now, bear in mind that they have a mental illness. They have an illness of their brain. How does that work?
What do you mean?
How is it? Why should the expectation that someone who is mentally ill to follow up and take all their medication consistently, follow up with all their visits for counseling or visits and doctor visits? I mean, is that, especially as you said, folks who are worried about feeding their children,
mm-hmm.
live somewhere, shelter, and so on. You know, the idea of getting meds and having your medication done and going for your therapy and your group therapy. I mean, how difficult is that to do? Because if that in itself is so critical, the fact that you have access, but in access, in a way, asking me to realize and get the most out of that access, I have to participate. But my life's condition is that
it limits your ability.
Exactly, my ability to do that.
Right.
I mean,
right,
so is
right.
that an issue?
It is an issue. And that becomes a part of treatment as well. You know, it's that compliance, making sure
right.
that you take the medication. So the psychoeducation that goes on for the patient is really important in explaining, you know, what the triggers are and how to keep those triggers at bay by taking your medication and following up with your therapy and, you know, getting sleep, which is really important.
Mm.
So, that's part of the, for any consumer, that would be part of the treatment planning,
mm-hmm.
is ensuring that. But that's also where the participation and the support of family members come in.
Mm-hmm.
Because if a consumer is having a psychotic break, say, they may not recognize that they're having the psychotic break.
Right, right.
But the family members will recognize it and will realize what's going on.
Right.
And so they may reach out to the providers. And they may take them to the hospital or call 911.
Right. But I mean, and I guess they then play that critical role in making sure in terms of, compliance, as you said, and being able to have access to treatment and signing up for the appropriate things to get them done. But in the beginning, they themselves have to come to terms with this. And otherwise, some people kind of distance themselves and kind of leave these guys out there to fend for themselves.
Right, right. Which makes this statistic so alarming. That suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. It's more common than homicide, and the third leading cause of death for people 15 to 24 years. And more than 90% of those who die by suicide have had one or more mental disorders.
Right.
So mental health illness and suicide is, there's almost a direct relationship.
Mm-hmm.
With that.
Right. But I guess, I don't know, in terms of, your life situation and how you're able to cope with your life in terms of, we go back to housing and so on and your children and whether or not your children are taken away from you because you can't take care of them and so on. But in terms of recovery and effective treatment of mental illness, do you think that as is, that there is effect, that it is an effect, we're effectively treating mental illness. Those who become a part of a treatment program, I'm sure medication, as with anything else, as with cardiac or any other disease, cancer and so on, I am sure the effectiveness of medication over the years have increased. And I would like to think that whatever other therapy or group therapy that has been put in place over the years have increased. But in your opinion, do you think that the outcome of those who are a part of a program consistently stand a chance of overcome? I don't want to use the word overcome. I don't know how you – do you recover? Do you heal?
Right. Making progress.
Do you just maintain? I don't know. A better outcome in prior years having gone – if they stuck to the same regimen.
Right. I can't speak to prior years, but I'll say this. That I believe that most people who are a part of a treatment program where they are consistently participating and they take their medication, they're compliant, and they're engaged in a therapeutic process, and they have the support to navigate, going to the food pantries or getting the pantry letter or having enough to eat or having stable housing, that most of those people tend to do better than those who do not have that.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're part of a program, a comprehensive, holistic program where, even if all the pieces are not in place, but many of the pieces are in place, that these individuals tend to do better. They tend to do better. So then it's not about me getting someplace to eat or having a place to sleep tonight. It's about, okay, maybe I can start to think about going back and getting my GED or thinking about getting my driver's license or thinking about these other things that so many of us take for granted. Mm-hmm. But for many people who are affected by mental illness, it's a big deal. To even get enrolled, to even say I'm going back to school after I dropped out in the 8th or the 9th or the 10th grade and I'm 48 years old.
And I guess those around you, your family circle or your extended family or those in your friend circle, play a great role in terms of how you follow through and so on, right?
Having a support system
right.
becomes really important.
So family members,
and it may not be it may not be blood family.
Members. Right. But those in your circle, recognizing and understanding that this is not something to shy away from. It's something to really get engaged and participate in because it adds to the success story.
Right. But I think the most important thing that I think, and I see this as a takeaway, is that even someone with with a diagnosed mental illness, they are still the experts in their lives.
Right.
They are still capable of making decisions that support their goals, and they can identify what it is that they want to work on and work on those things.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not about somebody being mentally ill, so, oh, we have to make decisions for them, which was essentially a model so long ago. But now the model of treatment that's mostly used is consumer-driven, that the individual does have the right to participate and make decisions. The individual is, you know, required to be part of the treatment planning and to decide what the treatment goals are.
Mm-hmm.
And to really take responsibility for what happens in treatment.
Mm, okay.
You know?
So you're saying that's a...
Mm-hmm.
That's a way more effective way of communicating or being in treatment.
It is.
Right.
It is. It's absolutely way more effective because it gives the power back to the individual. And you can imagine in a society where we treat people with mental illness as in many ways as though they are pariahs.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if the treatment model is one that restores power and restores a sense of, you know, being to the individual,
mm-hmm.
that they can and they matter and what they want matters, then that's a way more effective way
mm-hmm.
of engaging the person in treatment and, you know, hoping to move towards some level of progress.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But do you think that those, I mean, I can think of, I remember, as you made reference to yourself as a child, I remember as a child, there was this one young lady, her name was Monica, you know, who, she would go through bouts of mental illness. And I don't know for a fact, it was, again, fear and you got out of her way and, you know whatever misunderstanding we as a community had at the time. There was no one, as far as I know, that was trying to help her get access to care.
Yeah.
You know, there was no one saying, well, I'm sure if someone stumbled and fell and bruised their lip and so on, they would take them for care.
Not necessarily.
No, well, I mean, I'm saying if someone is physically ill.
Physically,
I mean,
yeah.
If you fall and break your hand, they put you in a car and they take you to the
mm-hmm.
hospital and so on. Here, no, they were waiting. What I remember is, like, they were waiting for it to go away, like dissipate, and she comes back to normal from wherever she is, as if she's, you know, she's off someplace in her head, and she'll come back, you know. But no one was offering to help, or there was no place to go that anyone knew of.
You know,
and maybe it was always there, but we were not educated on the facts enough,
right? On how to help.
Hoping that's changed. You know, I'm hoping it's changed. But not only that's changed, but hopefully that we ourselves as a people have changed, where we can look at those that we know with mental illness, especially those in our circle, and, you know, wrap our arms around them and figure out how to get them the help that they need.
90 right. seconds.
Right. And, you know, that story that you just said, you know, triggered the memory for me when I was little. There was a woman in my community, too, who was mentally ill. I guess she was raped because she got pregnant, and then when she had the baby, she walked around with the baby for a little while.
Right.
Like, nobody took the baby, and this was a person who was
right.
mentally deranged.
Right.
And, you know, and I remember that. So, you know, I guess that's the takeaway. The takeaway
60 seconds.
Illness is one, it's not contagious, and that, you know, we have to be supportive as individuals and as a community. So,
and then we're not immune to it. It affects our families. It has
it
doesn't discriminate.
It does. It
so
does.
Don't pretend as if it only happens to others. It
right.
happens to every family.
Right. It happens to all of us.
Right.
So, I guess that's the takeaway, is that if you see someone in distress, then seek ways to help.
Mm-hmm.
So until next time, where we wish you will call in and participate. We want to hear from you, so call us with what you want to talk about. Until next time, take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Discussions with Delia. Check us out on the web at discussionswithdelia.com and like our Facebook page, Discussions with Delia. Please follow me on Twitter at Discussion Delia. Thank you again for listening. Peace and blessings.